Previously on the Critical Mass Podcast.
Is this thing on? Okay.
I seen it happen. Eat a duck.
You saw a catfish eat a duck?
It's fuel for the imagination.
Do you hear things too?
Sound bites. Keep them frozen. They're good.
I hear someone.
No, don't turn it down.
In keeping with my constantly decreasing attention span, the new format for Critical Mass Podcast will consist of shorter segments, including but not limited to B-movie reviews, the new Shinies, Dragon Ball Z, and, I haven't really decided what to call the part of the podcast where Curtis and I just sit around and moan about what we're on about this week. But right now, I'm going with cubic randomizers, and I think that's what's going to close it out today. So, but in the meantime, let's start with some new shinies. New shinies. There's so many things to pick from.
God, yes.
Isn't it terrible?
Yeah, because I got to concentrate not to think about them so I can work on the game. Because it'd be like 2 seconds. Oh, let's just do this.
And the new shiny I really want to get on about is probably Dungeon Roll. But because it's still so new and still so shiny. We had such a good time at Gen Con. But I'm going to restrain myself because it's not widely available yet.
Yeah.
No, I think the new shiny I'm on about, I started reading the new Stony Man novel. the current release is Precipice. The author is Phil Elmore. Of course, you won't find his name on the cover because these are all ghost-written novels. So if you're looking for it in the bookstore, look under Don Pendleton is the credited author. The series is Stony Man, and the title is Precipice. But I'm the past, I don't know, half a dozen Mac Bolan books have been kind of so-so, kind of middle of the road. And I didn't know if I was getting disillusioned or maybe I was getting burned out on them.
Could be.
Or it happens. Yeah. I've been subscribed for, 2 years now?
Yeah.
Give or take.
And then some.
And, that's 2 books a month every, thereabouts. Yeah, 2 books a month, because I get them.
Yeah, 2 books a month, 12 months a year, every month.
So that's a lot of novels, a lot of series novels, and I like series fiction. But, the past couple of them have been just kind of so-so. Mac shows up, he goes places, he blows things up, and they've been new authors and old authors and over-the-top authors, and I don't know. But Mr. Elmore's book has got me fired back up about it, and I'm hard-pressed to put my finger on exactly why, whether it's because he's the situation is... No, you know what? I know exactly what's going on. It's the way he writes Able Team.
Yeah.
Able Team is three combat troops. They work in America to deal with local situations.
Domestic.
Yeah, domestic terrorism or whatever.
Yeah, whatever it needs that episode.
Yeah. And the Able Team crew is Carl Lyons, who's the hard-nosed veteran strongman leader of the team. Gadget Swartz is the electronics whiz, and he's the smart aleck. And Rosario Blancanales is the politician. He's the face man of the group. And I think that's what it is. The way Elmore writes Able Team, it's like I'm reading an A-Team novel. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And I miss the A-Team. I've been lamenting the demise of Burn Notice in one long forlorn love letter, which I'll go into
later, because we almost thought we had something in Graceland that meet.
No, but so I think that's what it is, because the Phoenix Force missions are there, and the bad guys are fleshed out, and all that stuff just serves to flesh out the book and round out the experience for me. But I think, and I picked it up, and I was expecting just another, you know, Stony Man action adventure. I read them because they don't take, you know, there's not a lot of investment there. I can pick it up. I can put it down.
Not a lot of thinking.
Not a lot of thinking. They're just light action novels.
Yep.
And this one jumped out at me and surprised me, and I like it. And so thank you, Mr. Elmore, for bringing me back the A-Team in a novel format. That's not a big shiny, but that's the new shiny that I'm appreciating right now.
Right.
Kurt, what have you got?
Oh, let's see. It's Toma Horus 4 from Frog God Games.
Yes.
It's the sequel or the next volume in the set to the Toma Horrors for Pathfinder.
And where did you acquire the Tome of Horrors for?
Some little booth at some little convention.
Some little convention. There were one or two people there.
It was Gen Con.
This year. The guy was very excited to sell it to you, though.
Oh, yeah. Those guys are. I mean, I follow their site, go to their boards. I'm always ordering something. But because I like it. I mean, it just expands the monsters more, and they went color this time.
Yes.
Paper quality was a little bit, you know, the standard, not glossy or nothing.
Right,
but
it's
yeah.
not the heavy gloss.
No, but it was nice. I was surprised by the color.
And it has squirrel people in it.
Yes.
I mean,
yes, it has a new race for the game, squirrel people.
I don't
Scurrians, they're
Scurrians,
called.
That's it, yes. Yeah. Scurrians.
Yes. I've already looked at them.
I know. You have promised I'm allowed to play a Scurrian.
Yep. Well, I made a list of the races and stuff, but yeah. And it's just, you know, ton of neat monsters, new templates to add to critters, like the winged template, add it to any critter, like winged apes, winged ogres, winged goblins. I just like went bonkers every time I'm looking at it. Because I saw this. That is awesome.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah, I mean, it's got everything. And then some. And I hope they keep doing it. Because I did buy the PDF when I got back.
Right.
And then I bought the PDF for Swords and Wizardry.
Right.
Format for their other game.
So is the tome themed in any way? Did they draw everything? No, they didn't.
Just monsters. Just monsters. More of them. They tell you where it originally appeared under each monster and credited to. Well, if like some of their monsters appeared in their module, the big mega dungeon of theirs.
Oh, okay.
Well, like one or two, and they go, first appeared in Rapathek this, or if it appeared in old books and stuff, and they've got back, they say originally appeared here by whomever, or who the author is who created it, because they got a bunch of people just submitted stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And I thought that's neat, because they do that all through. You go through the Tome of Horrors on each monster, it's like that.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
All right, so that's your new shiny. I can expect to face monsters from the Tome of Horrors next time we go into the dungeon,
Most likely. I mean, the main reason I started getting those books is Paizo for Pathfinder, they're using them in their modules and adventure paths.
Okay.
So, you know, see this, Luke, taken from Tome of Horrors. So I was like,
sweet.
Oh, I got a reason to get the book.
And these guys aren't affiliated with Paizo, are they?
No, they just, I guess, a licensee of them.
Well, Paizo's done under open gaming license.
Yeah.
So anything that, anything that, like all these critters in the Tome of Horrors, all of that open gaming text, Paizo has complete right to use as long as they credit it.
Yeah, and they do. Because in the back of all of them, they got the list of where it's from.
Right.
That's
sweet.
Long
that's
list.
Awesome.
But yeah, that's what got me. Because
it's great cross marketing.
Oh yeah.
You know, Paizo says, "Hey, we support the community, and you know, if you like more like this, you can go find these other products." That's awesome.
But yeah, they're neat stuff.
Awesome. All right, so that's your new shiny, huh?
Oh yeah.
All right, the luster is gonna take a little bit to wear off on that one, I suspect.
Oh yeah, because there's other shinies just around, so. It's just all over.
You got to be careful which section of your bookshelf you look at.
Yes,
at time.
Always. It is.
Dragon Ball Z is not just mindless action violence.
I'll show you why over the next 5 minutes as we rock the Dragon Bash.
Dragon, Dragon, rock the Dragon, Dragon Ball, sing. Dragon, Dragon, rock the Dragon, come.
You're listening to Rock the Dragon Ball Z. Let's dive right in. I'm Isaiah, and he's Winston. This is our first episode.
It is.
No.
This is Dragon Ball Z Season 1, Disc 1, and we're going to be reviewing these by disc because that's convenient. There's a marathon feature on the disc that lets us just watch all the episodes together as if they were a single movie. Now, Dragon Ball Z, I've read all the manga, and Isaiah has not, and neither one of us have ever seen the Dragon Ball series. We'll get to that eventually.
We've seen all the movies. Dragon Ball Z.
We've seen the Dragon Ball movies.
Yeah.
Path to Power and Bloodstone Rubies and the other two. I forget what they are.
I have no idea.
So we have a background.
But we have seen all of the Dragon Ball Z episodes.
It's been a while, which is why we're watching them again and talking about them. So anyway, that's kind of where we are and what's going on.
Right.
Dragon Ball Z marks a change in direction for the story. The first story is really kind of heavily influenced by Japanese mythology. We have the story of the Monkey King, which is a Japanese folktale. The author takes the tale of the Monkey King and brings it into the modern day. Goku basically becomes the modern-day Monkey King with modern-day Monkey King adventures. The new one is going to be different in tone. It's more violent than Dragon Ball was, and it's going to be different in scope. It addresses different issues, different themes, and different levels of story.
Goku is a grown-up. He has a wife named Chi-Chi and a son named Gohan.
Yes, he does. And we'll talk sometime later about the puns that the different names mean in Japanese, because they're all puns. We want to kind of look at the first disc.
All right.
And what happens is Goku brings Gohan to meet Master Roshi and the rest
and
of the gang.
And have a reunion.
A reunion.
But Raditz shows up, his evil older brother, kidnaps Gohan.
Good.
And Goku cannot see his son again until he joins Raditz.
And he has to turn evil.
But Piccolo shows up. Yeah, Piccolo.
Who was
Goku's enemy
in the first series. He teams up with Gohan because Raditz had showed up to bully him.
Goku.
Because Raditz had showed up to bully Piccolo earlier, and Piccolo didn't like it. They fight Raditz, and just basically get their heads handed to him.
Although Gohan cannot stand seeing his father being beaten up anymore. His power level increases to over 600 and beats Raditz.
Yes, he does.
Then his power vanishes. Raditz gets his power back. But, wouldn't you know it, Piccolo has a way to defeat Raditz, and also it takes time. So, Goku beats him up, although Raditz is really
Goku
beating him up.
Goku buys time.
Finally gets him by his tail in a hold.
Yep.
And,
Piccolo shoots his special beam cannon.
Why do I keep forgetting that?
Which?
And destroys both of them.
That's right. He kills both Raditz and Goku.
But both of them disappear because the King of Whateverness has a special plan for them. Or
Kami.
At least Goku. Yeah.
Yeah, Kami has a special plan. He takes Goku to the next world. And Goku journeys through the next world. He embarks on his journey along Snake Way to get special training from one of the residents from King Kai who lives in the other world. Meanwhile, Gohan is taken by Piccolo to receive training because in 1 year's time, two new Saiyans are going to show up and they're going to pick up where Raditz left off. Now, we've got a couple of archetypal stories going on here that just kind of set the stage. We've got, we don't have the typical hero's journey. What we do have is an element of, Japanese mythology in Goku's journey through the other world, where he has basically conquered all the challenges that await him on Earth, and so he has to face a different set of challenges in the next life, in the next dimension. And, we have a healthy blend of Western mythology in the taking of Gohan by Piccolo to basically be raised in the wild. And the story of the wild child is... We're familiar with the wild child stories, probably most famously done by Rudyard Kipling and Mowgli in the Jungle Book.
I really like that story.
Yes, and then by Edgar Rice Burroughs and the Tarzan.
That pretty much marks the end of this episode.
And that's basically where this disc leaves off. Just kind of setting the stage for things to come and setting the stage for a whole lot of Dragon Ball Z discussions to come, so stay with us and we'll see you on the next episode.
I've been Wiz and he's been Broomstick. No, I've been Isaiah, he's been Winston, and you've been listening to Rock the Dragon Ball Z. Later!
Okay, so the first of our B-movie double feature today is Invasion Roswell. Just aired on Sci-Fi. In fact, it's still on the Sci-Fi website. And we watched it, earlier this week, and it aired last week.
Yeah, Monday.
Monday, right.
Mm-hmm.
Starring Greg Evigan with a release date of 2013. And I am literally unable to find out anything else about it without going back and watching the movie again. Well, I mean, in the way of production studio or,
yeah.
I know it's not from the Asylum.
Yeah, we could tell that.
Because I follow their release schedule pretty closely.
Religiously.
But you identified one of the actresses in there.
Yeah, she played Tasha Yar in Star Trek.
Right. Do you remember her name?
Nope.
Yeah,
that's the only reason I remember.
Oh, man.
You know, she played in Pet Sematary after she left Star Trek. Those
right.
were first major. So,
Tasha Yar.
Yeah. Anyone will know. The one who slept with Data.
Right.
That is almost her crowning moment.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Invasion Roswell, I mean, it's these movies are famous for being mashups. And
yeah.
What did we decide this one was a mashup?
Independence Day.
And, come on, three letters. Starts with an R, ends with an Ed.
Red.
Right.
Retired Extremely Dangerous.
Right. Because all the guys...
Were retired.
Yeah, they're retired Special Forces dudes or science dudes. I was never really clear on
that. They were the specially trained force to fight the alien invasion for when the crash happened.
Oh, okay.
And they were training all those years, and then finally they just pulled the funding because they ain't coming back.
Right.
Well, they did.
They did. They came back. Right. Yeah. You know, they came back because the funding was pulled. That's the way these things
That's
work.
That's the way it works. They watched the budgets. Got them. Go.
Yeah, get it.
Time to invade.
But, the aliens made a few critical mistakes in the film. They blew up Greg Evigan's wife.
Oh, yeah.
Intentionally and on purpose. Maliciously, even.
Yeah, they...
You know, because in a in an invasion where the motherships, which do look like a squared off version of the ones in Independence Day,
well, with little bites taken,
right, like flying sprockets,
yeah, or almost like crackers, you know.
But in an invasion where these motherships are taking the time out of their schedule to nuke. You know, major cities and landmarks, because that's trendy.
Well, yeah, it works.
One of them flies out to the middle of nowhere to bomb Greg Evigan's ranch. I mean, just literally, there's...
Straight to the ranch.
And boom! I think they dispatched a guy, and I guess he had a piece of metal that they were after.
What he took from the place
from
when they retired.
Site, right.
Yeah, they somehow could sense it.
Yeah, I don't know. That was never... I was never real clear on that either. But that's okay. It didn't have to be. The the alien designs were kind of neat. The guys in armor. I mean, they were your basic guys in armor.
Yeah.
But they weren't quite Predator armor.
No. They're more like the almost... Well, they were just like suits of armor because they carried their guns.
Yeah, I don't really know what we should compare them to. I mean, it was very, very generic.
Yeah.
almost predator, but not quite. They were almost stormtroopers, but not quite.
Almost like the aliens from, you know, Battleship.
But not quite. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the armor wasn't recognizable.
And it wasn't bad.
No.
But, and more impressive than that, they actually had people in armor playing the alien instead of CGI-ing, you know, CG hordes of aliens.
No, they needed that for the ships and stuff.
Right? And, okay, the CG, that's something we should probably mention. It was not bad.
No. It was actually good. It was better than Raptor Island, which is
my bib. To be fair, that's your low mark.
Yes, it is. So if anything's above that, it's all good.
Well, it was seamless is the word I'm looking for. It looked like the people were interacting with things, and you know, the things were correct in their perspective, and they flowed smoothly, and they moved naturally.
Yeah.
And it didn't look animated. It looked photographed. So the CG was good. A quick evaluation on our B scale for B movies. Blood. Not a lot of...
There was only when one of them got hurt and took the serum that turned him basically into the alien.
Right.
That was the only real graphic blood for that.
Yeah, you know, some of the guys, the aliens would bleed out every now and then.
Yeah, or when they shot them, their head would come off and there'd be a little squirt.
Yeah,
but
as far as graphic violence, really kind of low. So on the graphic violence end, really low on the graphic violence. Breast, butts, and bad language of an X3. And I think we can chalk this up to it being a sci-fi... Yeah. Made-for-TV movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because those three were just almost not in evidence at all.
Well, yeah, and then the whole cast, you know, was supposed to be old folks, so you ain't going to see them, you know. Because they're supposed to be, you know, from the old days, from when the first alien crashed, so.
Right. Old people love is not something anybody really wants to see. And, you know, there was swearing, but
standard.
Yeah, it wasn't anything other than what you normally get on primetime television.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be fair, I think it was a lot less than we get on the shock networks like FX and...
Yeah,
you know,
FX
so.
Just does it when... it just started after they, you know, let them slide.
Yeah. So The three B's are not, and then our final B value is bardic value.
Story.
The story. And I don't know, what'd you think?
It was okay. Wasn't great, because, you know.
I'd watch it again.
I mean, I was a little ticked off because he got over his wife so quick by the end
of
the show.
Real quick. He didn't even
cry.
They didn't even finish rounding up the old gang. They weren't even done getting the band back together before he was hitting on Tasha Yar.
Yes, because that was his old squeeze before he met his wife. So
oh.
His wife was the rebound.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was kind of harsh.
Yeah.
So,
you know what? If it's on TV, I'll watch it again.
I won't buy it because the guns weren't that great.
No, the guns. Oh, the guns deserve a special mention. We were trying to place the guns, and for the life of me, they look like Cabela's light guns.
Yeah.
They
look like it because of the way the armature and stuff is.
And the way they were slim and long.
And then they slapped up a couple of extra stock parts or something on the sides to make it have a big clip.
Maybe it's because they were white. Maybe it's because they were painted white. I don't know.
And they were always so clean.
Yeah, but the guns deserve a special mention. I thought that was the funniest part of the portion of the show. We've seen a lot worse,
and that's the way we've been released.
Our final verdict on the B movie scale, is this a buy, borrow, or boycott?
Borrow,
and I'd say that includes television. All right, well, let's change reels. So the second movie on our double feature is the infamous, the wonderful, the absolutely marvelous Sharknado. Yes,
the surprise hit of the Sci-Fi Network.
Surprise to whom? Because I wasn't the least bit surprised. Were you?
No, but it's people who don't normally watch it, and then my God, it's great!
It was the most beautiful thing ever.
I mean. It's logical. Sharks can be thrown around in a tornado.
Well, obviously. obviously. You know what? I think a lot of that comes from people who just, they don't get what these movies are supposed to be. And they don't get what they're supposed to be about.
You know what it was? Somebody's regularly scheduled program was canceled, and it was a bunch of people all went to the same channel and said, ooh, okay.
What's this?
I'll give it a shot.
Yeah. Now, the Sharknado is from The Asylum, and it stars Tara Reid and, I don't know, some guy from 90210. But, so Sharknado is from The Asylum, and that aired on Sci-Fi again. One of the few shows that gets replayed. We don't see that on Sci-Fi very often.
Yep.
And then, of course, it's slated to hit home video in the early September.
Yeah.
So yeah, Asylum's got a release date of September 3rd. Now, Sharknado, I mean, the premise is, it's in the title. It's a tornado, it's a typhoon, a waterspout, it picks up sharks, and it moves over land.
Yes.
And, of course, the sharks do what sharks do.
Eat people as they hit the ground.
Right, because these are movie sharks, all right? Yeah, and just the situation that goes along with it is so far on the... I mean, it's just this side of ludicrous and believable. It's not like Airplane or, you know, The Naked Gun, where things are just way over the top. This takes a ludicrous situation and treats it as if it could happen. And I think that was just a perfect approach. I really appreciated it. I liked it. You know, and then, of course, the variety of gardening implements that they took to defend themselves against the sharks.
Oh, yeah. Homemade bombs to blow them up in the air, to blow up the tornado.
To blow up the tornado, that's right.
To stop them.
Because explosions, that's why.
And a chainsaw. You always need a chainsaw.
Always need a chainsaw. Yeah. And, they just did so many things correctly with this movie. Asylum's got a whole page devoted to Sharknado social media and the buzz that was generated. There's a graphic somebody did that compared the viewership of Game of Thrones.
Oh God!
To the viewership of Sharknado.
Well,
and
I mean, it aired. Then the next day, that Monday going to work, all of a sudden it's in the news. Sharknado, greatest thing! And I was like, what the.
It wasn't just in the news. It was on ABC, CBS, prime time in the morning.
It was on CNN. Yeah. That's where I seen it, and I was like, oh, bull.
What? Oh, yeah.
It was, okay. And then one stopped. I was like, okay, that's cool. Well, Tsunami's next, or Well Nami.
Well Nami, yeah. Well, Destiny found that ICANN has cheeseburger thing where people did... I mean, they just started riffing on the animal themed weather with, you know, the movies, the next movies that are coming up, Hurricane Ian and Shih Tsunami and Avalanche and Nor'easter with bunnies. And, yep. Oh, I don't. There was one about ducks. I don't remember. Some Earthquack. Earthquack. Oh, that was it. And oh yeah, so. It's awesome. It was great. So applying our B scale to it, blood. There was a fair amount of blood. I mean, there were sharks eating people and people disemboweling sharks.
Yeah, and crawling out of them.
Yep. So yeah, there was a fair amount of blood and violence. Once again, breast, butts, and bad language all kind of clumped together there in the center.
Yeah. Hot waitress.
But nobody disrobed.
No,
there were
scantily clad.
There were some bikinis.
Yeah.
And I think that's about as far as it went.
Yeah.
And once again, the language was, maybe it was because we saw it on television. I've noticed that sometimes this happens. I saw Mega Piranha on TV. And it was really, really cool.
Yep.
And then I made the mistake of watching the opening scenes of it with the kids in the room. And the DVD release opens with topless women. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe Sharknado will do something like that. I kind of doubt it.
No, they don't need to.
The Asylum has begun to lean away from that kind of thing.
More TV friendly, basically.
Yeah, family TV friendly. It's where their market is. It's where the money is. And it's I think it's a good decision, but, you know, whatever. And Bardic value on Sharknado. You know what? I almost taped it again when it aired on the repeat. but I'll wind up buying the DVD, buying the video release.
Oh yeah.
Story value on it, it wasn't really. It
wasn't bad.
It wasn't bad. I mean,
wasn't great. But it was Sharknado.
We've seen worse. Yeah. It was the story was a vehicle for sharks and tornadoes.
Yes.
But we got to see the family that was torn apart and
come back together.
And then they came back together.
Due to surviving a Sharknado.
Right, due to surviving a Sharknado. Oh, well, yes. You know, honestly, Kurt, if I survived a Sharknado, it would make me look at the world in a whole new light, wouldn't you?
Probably.
So on our continuum of buy, borrow, boycott, for me, this rate's a B+. This is a buyer.
Yeah, it's a buyer.
This is one I'm going to get.
I'll buy it when it comes out September 3rd.
Right, as soon as it goes. I'm going to hit the Best Buy and get the Blu-ray, because those are all Bs, doggone it. I'm running out of Bs to insert in the...
Blu-ray!
To insert in the B-movie.
This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license.